I think a lot of people think that, you know, it's like this secret society that nobody wants to let you in, but literally they want music. You know what I mean? Like right. they, because they get paid, you know, if they place it, they have a bigger catalog, it's more opportunity for them. So it's a win-win, and you bring value to their situation. So, you know, don't be afraid to just reach out and ask.
Hey, what's up? This is Gabe from Legion Beats and MIDI Money, which is where we help music producers start, grow, and scale their music production businesses. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to midimoney.com/go. All right, guys, welcome to the MIDI Money Podcast. Today we have a special guest, somebody who I've been aware of. You know, I'm a student of the game, so I see when, you know, there's producers, I always like to see what everybody's up to. And somebody who I think I first came across a few years ago and have been very impressed with just what you've been doing and really carved your own lane, which I think is dope. So Clint, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Gabe, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, man. So maybe if you could give just like quick backstory. I know something that you do a lot of now is like sync licensing. So I'm curious kind of how you came into that and, you know, what your journey was from starting out to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I first kind of heard about sync licensing some years ago when I was in college. So around, you know, 2006, 2007. And it was a college buddy of mine. You know, he kind of told me about Taxi, which, you know, a lot of people have heard of, where they, you know, you kind of pitch music, you go to the road rally, they teach you about getting music in TV and film. So I would help him out with his tracks by playing keys and stuff like that. And then he would like pitch music out. So he was trying to kind of introduce me to it. But I was kind of focused on, you know, just trying to break in producing for big artists and things like that. You know, Dark Child was like one of my favorite producers. So I was just like, man, I want to be like Dark Child and produce for everybody. You know what I mean? So
he was so dope. I feel like he was underrated. Like he doesn't really get into that like category of like the Timbaland, Dr. Dre or something, but he was like that. He was somebody who did it for decades and had all kinds of different styles and stuff. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyways, man. My bad. I just had to.
No,
had to,
you're good. Yeah. So yeah, man. So I kind of, you know, I just kind of kept it in the back of my head. And then, you know, some years later, it kind of resurfaced. I was just like, you know what? This would be kind of cool. Let me give it a try. Did Taxi for a while. At the time, my music, it just wasn't ready. The mix was horrible. The style of music I was producing wasn't necessarily what TV and film was looking for a lot of the time. So I didn't really see a lot of success when I gave it a try that, you know, around 2008, 2009. So some years went by. I moved to Atlanta. And I got into a publishing deal with a company who, you know, they kind of pitch for TV and film. And that was kind of when I got my very first placement through the NFL Network. So that kind of showed me, okay, you know, this is something that, you know, if I just replicate that process, the same process I did here, I think, you know, it could be a cool way to generate another stream of income in music. So I kind of further pursued it and just said, okay, you know, I want to do 10 placements in a year. I want to see if I can do 10 placements in a year. And, you know, I just hit the ground running, started reaching out to a boatload of companies and, you know, eventually just started picking up momentum, signing deals, licensing deals to kind of pitch to different music libraries and things like that. And it just kind of built from there. And then, you know, I decided that I wanted to kind of document the journey on Instagram and YouTube and things like that. And, you know, it ended up helping a lot of other producers who didn't really know anything about it. And it kind of grew into, you know, just kind of this whole thing of, you know, being one of the go-to guys to kind of show people the ins and outs of music licensing, how to get started and, you know, how to create another stream of revenue with music that's kind of outside, you know, major artists and things like that. So it's been a dope journey, man. I've learned a lot and I've been able to help a lot of producers in that lane. And yeah, man, that's kind of how I got into it.
Yeah, no, that's dope. I feel like there's a lot of good stuff in there. Like for one thing is like, I know one of the things that I love about this job of, you know, being a music producer, being an entrepreneur is that you never really know where it's going to take you. But as long as you're down to just, you know, figure out, okay, what's the next move? What seems like, you know, I can take the skills that I have right now, or I can take, you know, the next goal that I'm trying to hit and what's the next opportunity and not being stuck on like, well, originally I thought I was going to go this exact route. I was going to just pitch to labels or whatever. Like, oh no, I found out about this, the sync placements thing from my friend. And then, you know, kind of took it from there and then started documenting it. And that became its whole own thing. And then that turned into, oh, now I can teach other people about that. And that's a whole nother level of value where not only getting results for myself, but for other people. Yep. That's something that's really cool about this game. I think that's dope that you're, you know, always took that next step of like, okay, this is working. Cool. Let me double down on this. And let me turn this into three different opportunities and just kind of keep going down that path. I think super cool.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And the teaching thing is dope too. That's something that for me is relatively new. You know, it's only been a little over a year since I've really focused on that side of things, but it's something that's, it's fun to do and it's fulfilling in a different way. You know, it's dope to do the thing by yourself, but then it's really, you know, it's a different level of fulfillment when you can help other people get their result.
Exactly. And yeah, man. And your passion kind of spills over into it. And I mean, I've gotten one of your courses, the traffics for producers and things like that, selling beats online. And the thing I like about it is that you don't just teach, you know, the business of selling beats online. Like the tools that you give producers is literally, you know, how to find, you know, who you're selling to from the ground up, and it's principles that you can apply to anything, not just beats. You know what I mean? So really, really good information, man. But yeah, it's dope to give back and help others, man. And that's honestly, I think I kind of like the feeling I get from that than to getting placements. You know what I mean? Like it's a great feeling.
Yeah. Well, it's a whole different thing. I mean, you know, I played the placements game for a while and, you know, never did amazing at it, but did all right. But it was always, it always felt like I was reaching out to somebody. I was always waiting for somebody to reply to me, or waiting for somebody to come save me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the record label was finally going to cut me the big check, or I was finally going to get that placement or whatever. And it's, you know, I know for me, it was when I started taking things into my own hands, like, no, I'm going to build my own brand. I'm going to build my own business, is when things really took off. And it's just a better feeling. Like you said, it's, you know, you don't feel like you're chasing after anybody. It's like, no, I'm building something here. And if people want, you know, what I'm doing, then they'll come be a part of it. So
exactly.
I think that's a big piece of it too. So what about, so let's say for producers who just want to kind of get started with the sync placements thing, mm-hmm. What are some of the common mistakes you see as far as trying to pitch it or reaching out to the right people? I know you mentioned Taxi, you mentioned getting a deal. Mm-hmm. What would be kind of the way to start?
Yeah. So the biggest mistakes, you know, I see a lot is reaching out and just filling up the email with beats and music right away. Usually I always like to kind of introduce myself, start a conversation, give value if I can, and just really connect with the person, because everything is about relationships. You know, you don't want to just, hey, here's my music, place it. It doesn't work like that. So always recommend people to kind of do their research before they reach out to anybody and, you know, see what they're working on, see what they place a lot of. That way you can kind of connect to them. And when you do send something, you can send something that they actually, you know, place a lot of. So it makes sense for them to open it up, listen to it, and hopefully place it on one day. So, you know, that I see that happen a lot. The biggest thing is not having the music structured properly for TV placements, especially background instrumental cues. It's different than, you know, producing for an artist. A lot of times you don't have a full-blown, you know, song with a bridge and breakdowns and things like that. And TV music is usually really short. I usually don't compose anything longer than a minute and a half. So that's another big one. And then honestly, just not knowing where to even begin. You know what I mean? So, you know, I help a lot of producers out, you know, just figure out, you know, what's the best place to start. And usually music libraries are usually the easiest way to kind of to get in, because they already have the relationships. You reach out to them. If they like your music, they'll bring you on board. And then from there, you know, they just kind of use their relationships to pitch their catalog. And then you kind of get in that way.
Yeah, no, for sure. I know for me, it hasn't been a huge focus of mine, but the times when I have gotten those TV and film placements, it's because it was through a library. It was through somebody that I knew who knew somebody at that library or whatever. What about for somebody who doesn't have the luxury of, like, for me, I just, you know, a friend of mine just happened to know somebody who worked over there. Like, how do you find those libraries in the first place?
Yeah. So Google, man, like Google literally is just like the best thing ever created. So I get, and that's how I started. I went on Google and I said, okay, Google music libraries, Google. I do a lot of urban music. So I said, you know, urban music libraries or hip hop music libraries, libraries that specialize in music that I do. So I know it'll be a good fit right away. So I'll do that. You can even Google music licensing companies and just play around with different keywords and then just create a list, you know, create an Excel spreadsheet, write down the ones that interest you, and then just start reaching out to them. And just keep track of who you reached out to so you're not, you know, doubling up and tripling up, hitting up people. And then, you know, just keep track of who hit back, who wants, a meeting or a phone call, who you sent music to, things like that. And then eventually the ball will start rolling.
Yeah, that organization is key. I got more spreadsheets than you could imagine, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But what might that first email say that when you reach out to somebody?
Yeah, I usually start out saying, hey, my name is Anthony, you know, from Clint Productions or Clint Music Publishing, and was just reaching out to see if you were interested in accepting submissions from new composers. And that's it. And then, you know, I'll let them kind of respond. And usually they'll give you instructions if they are accepting. They'll let you know exactly how they want it. If they're not, they'll say no. And then, you know, to just kind of move on or not right now. Things like that. So yeah, that's usually how I just start opening up. And then they're not like, I think a lot of people think that, you know, it's like this secret society that nobody wants to let you in, but literally they want music. You know what I mean? Like right. Because they get paid, you know, if they place it, they have a bigger catalog, it's more opportunity for them. So it's a win-win and you bring value to their situation. So, you know, don't be afraid to just reach out and ask. And
I realized we just said music libraries, but we didn't really explain like what does that mean exactly?
So a music library is pretty much essentially it's a music publisher for like TV and film music, but it's kind of like a company that has a large catalog of music. It could be instrumental, it can be with vocals, a combination of both. And they pretty much manage just a large catalog of music to pitch out to their clients. You have smaller ones, you have the medium sized ones, and you have, you know, big, large ones. And, you know, sometimes they'll put together albums. They'll hire composers to put together an album for, say, you know, tension music or, you know, EDM instrumental music and things like that. And some companies you could just upload straight to their website and then they just kind of manage everything online. And then they'll have clients come to their website, type in some keywords, and then your music could pop up, you know, under those keywords, and then they just license it instantly from their website. So it's right. Just a combination of those.
Yeah. So it makes it easy for the music supervisor or whatever, instead of trying to maintain all these relationships with all these different, you know, composers or producers or whatever, they just know, oh, this library has quality. They just go in there, they type in a few keywords and they have, you know, some options on that, right?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. And then something that I, you know, never thought about until I started, you know, pitching a few things for TV and film. You mentioned some of the arrangement stuff, because I'd always made beats, you know, for artists, whether if that was, you know, for labels or for selling beats online, you know, and I do like intro, hook, verse, hook, you know, slow fade out or whatever. And then I started pitching for TV and film. I'm like, no, it needs to be different. So what are some of those things that people could think about if they're specifically pitching for TV and film?
Yeah. So for instrumental music, a lot of the key elements are short intros. You know, you can have an intro, but you don't want it longer than, I don't know, say 12 to 14 seconds, because you got to think things in TV. When you have these scenes, things move quickly. So your music has to move quickly too. So quick intro, and then you want to slowly kind of build up to the hook. So you can have your first verse, the first half, maybe not as much instrumentation. And then your second half of that verse, you know, you can kind of build up. And then you got the hook with all of your instruments in there. And then usually I'll go into some sort of breakdown in that second verse where, you know, I may switch up drums or take out some of the sounds and then build right back up into the hook. And then probably the most important part is like the sting ending. I know you mentioned, you know, you would do the fade outs. A lot of times they don't really like fade outs. So they like a sting ending. And all that means is it ends on the one, like the one note, it's just a resolving note, and it just kind of stings out. And that way it allows them to kind of transition from scene to scene, you know, fairly easy.
Yeah. So, I remember that one was key and it made sense once they said it, but I just never thought about it until they did. It's like, oh yeah. And then you start paying attention, like you're watching TV or whatever. And you hear it, like they'll go like right before the commercial break or whatever. It like ends on a note, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, instead of just like, you don't really hear like a fade out.
Right.
So yeah, I was going to ask too, as far as, so when you're submitting those tracks, you're like keeping track, you got a spreadsheet. How do you know if you're doing well? Like, should you expect to hear back from a certain percentage or in a certain period of time? Or, you know, how do you kind of measure if you're doing it right?
So you kind of don't know, like, literally until, I mean, I didn't really know, man, I got the one placement. The only reason I found out about the first placement on NFL Network was because the publisher posts new placements on their website. Most publishers, they're not going to reach out to you because they're so busy. You know, they can't reach out to all of their composers and say, hey, you got a placement last night. And then royalties usually don't come in. I mean, it can be anywhere from 6 to 9 months after they actually turn in cue sheets before you even see royalties. So that could be a year, year and a half easy. So it's hard to know. I use a tool. It's called Tunesat.com. And you can kind of upload tracks that you know you submitted to companies that place music. And you can upload like up to 50 tracks for free. And then what it does is, you know, say something airs on VH1, it'll pick it up and it'll record like a sound bite of your music being used on the scene. It'll tell you which show, tell you what time it aired and all of that. So that kind of helps you if you want to know, like, wow. Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Know about
like
that. What's it called? Tune, what'd you say?
Tunesat, TUNESAT.com. Nice.
Okay.
Tunesat. Yeah, so it's a dope tool. I use that, you know, just to kind of keep track so I know what's going on and kind of get an idea, you know, of what's working.
So you can expect a pretty big delay, I guess, between even knowing if it gets placed and then eventually getting paid, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what's kind of the range that you've seen as far as getting, you know, I don't know, a TV placement, film placement, something like that, as far as how much you might expect to get paid for those things?
Yeah, it can be literally, man, like 5 cents to thousands, you know, it's huge because, and this is back in, and then depending on the situation, you could get some upfront if it's like a, you know, a film, a movie or something like that, or like a featured song on a show or something like that. Then usually you'll see upfront money. But for like reality show stuff, which uses a lot of music, most of that's going to be back end money. And yeah, it can range from pennies to, you know, to hundreds, and it can add up because it replays to thousands. But it depends on network, the time of day it's played, how long it's played. The longer, the better. So yeah, it's a lot of different variables to.
Yeah, it's some kind of like crazy algorithm, I guess, right? Because it did kind of random. Like I'll get something on a show, and it's like pennies, or maybe it's a few hundred bucks, or you know, I had a friend who, you know, he got the theme song on like you. Actually, it was funny. I got some beats on it was on T.I.'s reality show a few years ago. And like I had some beats on there, but he did like the theme song. So he got some upfront money. He got like, you know, he got a few thousand bucks, like some real money. And I got like, I don't know what it was. Not much.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how it works, man. It's like, it can definitely seem random once you're looking at it, but yeah, a theme song, if you can score a theme song, that's a good look.
Yeah. So what's like, now that you've sort of taught this to a few people and kind of seen, like, what do you think's a reasonable, I mean, I know it's going to vary so much, but like for somebody to start making a decent income, I don't know, $1,000 a month or something like that. What do you think's the timeline about for that? If things go well, I guess.
I always tell people, and I always try and set realistic expectations. Like, don't get into it expecting a lot of money for a few years. I'd say 3-4 years, man. It took a while before I seen like thousands in just back end royalties quarterly. So it can take a while, man. And you got to kind of work through that phase of not knowing if things are placing. And it's a numbers game. Like, you can't send 5 tracks out there and just be like, okay, I'm gonna just sit and wait for it to add up. And it won't. Like, you'll be just waiting forever. So you have to constantly create, constantly sending stuff out. And then, you know, over the years, you know, everything that you did from when you first started up until now, it'll start to snowball. And then you can use, even if it's not paying a whole lot of money on the royalties right away, the fact that you can say, you know, you had some music on T.I. show or, you know, your friend did a theme song, like just the fact that you kind of have that credibility, you can use that as leverage to open up other opportunities. You know what I mean? And, you know, and kind of get bigger projects and things like that. So, yeah, don't expect a lot of money up front. It can take a few years before you see like a significant amount of money in royalties.
Right. Gotcha. While you're waiting on that, I know you do multiple things. What are some of the other ways, some other things that you do, you know, business wise, as far as income streams or, you know, other things that you're doing while you're waiting for those checks to roll in?
Yeah, absolutely. So I produce music for indie artists, major artists as well. So that happens every now and then. And then I do, you know, sound packs and kits and things like that. I do affiliate marketing, you know, with companies. You know, you kind of partner up with brands and do different things with them. YouTube monetization things. So that's a stream from there. Google ads, courses, of course, consultations. I do that. And yeah, man, just different things, just all focused around music business and music licensing.
Yeah, just seeing where those little pockets of opportunity are. I want to dive into a couple of those. So you mentioned like affiliate marketing. What are some of those that you have, and maybe what are some ideas for some producers of how they might be able to do something like that?
Yeah, so so a big one, especially if you have like a YouTube channel and things like that, Amazon, you can sign up, be an affiliate with Amazon, and every time you have a video, everybody has gear, you know, so you can create an affiliate link with Amazon of the gear that you use when you do your videos, showing what you use. Leave those links at the bottom of your in your description. And it creates passive income. You set it and forget it. You know, you can set it up in your YouTube template. And, you know, every time people watch your videos and they click that link, even if they don't purchase the product that, you know, that you have linked up, you still get a percentage of whatever they buy on Amazon for like, it's like a certain period of time or whatever. So Literally you can have like a webcam on there that costs $20, but they could be on Amazon buying, I don't know, like the $300 piece of gear. Yeah, something crazy. And you know, you'll get a percentage of that. So there's that.
That's a gem too, because it's like you're just giving value. You know, people want to know. They probably ask you anyways, like, oh, what's your setup? Yeah. What mic are you using? What interface are you using? And so you just provide that information for them, whether that's in the description of the YouTube video or, you know, I'll do something where I'll send out in an email sequence to artists, just like, hey, here's my recommendations for setting up a home studio. And I, you know, give them some advice and say, hey, here's a few different mics at different price ranges. Here's, you know, some different gear. And they're all just Amazon affiliate links. It's value for them. And like you said, they click that link. If they do buy that microphone, cool. But even if they click it and now they're just clicking around, they buy something else. It's, you know, it's passive income. It costs the same for them that it would otherwise. So it's, you know, it's win-win-win all across the board.
Yeah. So that's one. Waves Audio, the plug-in company, they have like an affiliate program. You can sign up with them.
I was wondering, because I was sneaking around your YouTube and I saw that you had that link. I was wondering how you got that set up. So it's just, you can just sign up for the program?
I think you sign up, or like after you buy something, they send you like a coupon or a link or something to send your friends. And then I just keep track of, you know, of that link and just shoot it out. So yeah, man. So I put that in mixing courses and YouTube videos and things like that. Anything that's relevant, you know, to what you're doing, why not? You know, you don't have to maintain it or anything. So
no, it's huge. It's huge. I feel like it's something that's pretty slept on with producers is affiliate marketing, where it's something that's been super valuable for me, where, you know, like I said, like that email I send out, or my buddy Adrian is launching a beat pack or whatever. And cool, I got a list of, you know, 100,000 artists on my email list. Like, why don't I send a couple emails like, hey, he's got a great deal going. You get, you know, whatever the deal is, a bunch of beats and some, you know, so it's a win for them. It's a win for me because I get a percentage of those sales. It's a win for Adrian because he gets, you know, traffic he wouldn't have got otherwise. And man, it's just something where, especially if you are doing something where you're growing your audience, you know, hopefully your email list or phone numbers or, you know, or YouTube subscribers or whatever it is, now you can give value and get paid in multiple ways on that. So I feel like affiliate marketing is a big one.
Yeah, it's huge.
So you said YouTube monetization, is that, how's that going for you?
Pretty good. So I probably like now I kind of, the last couple years I slowed down on YouTube because we had a son. So that pretty much slowed everything down. So yeah, thank you. So I haven't done anything like as consistent as I was the past few years, but even with that, you know, just the videos, just the views keep coming up. So that's, I mean, that's an easy $150 like a month just doing nothing. And pretty much it's just, I think now they made it to where you have to have a certain amount of subscribers and watch time and things like that. But if you have that, you just click the monetize my video, they'll play an ad, and then Google will send you a check every month, depending on, you know, how many people click the ad, watch it, things like that. So yeah, another just completely passive extra couple hundred bucks, you know, just allowing
it all adds up, right? You got the money coming in from the licensing, the affiliate stuff, the monetization, and it all kind of adds up.
Yep.
So man, let's switch gears a little bit, because you mentioned you had a son. What's that like as far as the business balance, you know, being able to put in time? How do you approach that?
Yeah, man. So yeah, it's a huge balancing act. And it's been cool though. It's been cool. I have a super supportive wife. So we kind of, and she has like her own business and things like that. So we're doing a lot of balancing over here. But in a way, it kind of helped me, because now that I know my time is more limited, I'm able to really laser focus and say, okay, I need to make the most of these couple of hours that I have. Or, you know, usually I know I have time set aside from, you know, around 10 o'clock to one in the morning, one or two in the morning, to where I'm just focusing on business stuff and just getting as much done. So what I do is I kind of set up a schedule Monday through Friday. And, you know, Monday may be I'm working on TV and film composing stuff. Tuesday may be a marketing day. I'm just working on all marketing things. And then Wednesday could be, you know, something else. And I just kind of split it up day by day. And get chunks of work done. And then I brought a virtual assistant on board to kind of help me with a lot of the admin stuff that was taken away from the creative side of things. And she's been a huge help, man. While I'm asleep, she's knocking out, you know, a bunch of the stuff that would take me, you know, 2-3 hours to do. So just having that help, another set of hands, that's been super duper crucial, getting things done.
That's huge. It's at a certain, you know, I think as producers, a lot of times there's a certain amount of pride we have in like, oh, I can do everything. You know, I can shoot and edit videos. I can make beats. I can be a, you know, whatever, you know, I can drive traffic. I can do all this different stuff. And like, yeah, that's cool. But at a certain point, you can only do so much on your own. So I think it becomes another level where you can, okay, that's great. Congrats. You can do that. Cool. But like, you're only going to go so far if you're doing it yourself. And especially as your time becomes more valuable and more scarce, it's like, you know, how can you make the most of it? And I like what you said before that too, as far as kind of batching tasks. I think that's something that people underestimate, is how much time it takes for your brain to switch tasks. Where if you can, you know, if you're trying to do an hour of this and then an hour of this, or even worse, 15 minutes of this and then 50, it's like, it takes your brain like 15 minutes just to like really hone in on that thing and really kind of like optimize for that task. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I think that's really smart, is that batching thing.
Yeah, man. I did a YouTube video talking about that, especially creating, like, there's one day where I just create my video or YouTube content and just shoot everything. Cause if you think about the time it takes to set your camera up, get the mic and the audio set up, making sure everything is in focus, like that takes, I don't know, it takes me at least a solid hour just to get things right. Yeah. And then if you're trying to do that like every day instead of just batching it and just doing it all in one day, you'll save so much time, man, because it's already set up. You just do video, and then just be done with it. So yeah, that's huge, man.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's true. It's both sides of it. It's like just your brain and your focus is one part. And then, yeah, just the practical thing too. If you just have it set up for recording video, or you're set up for doing whatever task, like, yes, stick there, you know, stick with it and knock a bunch out in a day. Definitely, definitely smart. Yeah. What else, as far as like productivity and stuff, any little tools or software or services? Or I always like to find out what people are using. I don't know, Chrome extensions, anything that's good for productivity.
What I use. So I've been hip to this tool called Podio.com lately, Podio. So I've been using that between me and my VA. And I just like stuff to be organized. So it allows me to keep track of all the composers that work on my team and doing TV film stuff, to where, you know, we have the agreement and we have like all of their, you know, songwriter performing rights organization information all in like one little app on Podio. So that's super easy. And then
it's like a, what is it? I don't really understand what it is.
So it's called Podio, and it's a website, and it's a website that has apps in it, if that makes sense. So you go to podio.com and you can customize it to whatever your business is. It could be real estate, it could be music product, whatever you do, you can create, and they have like a list of already pre-made apps, and you can add an app to like a workspace. That's what it is. It's like a virtual workspace.
Okay, I see it. I pulled it up. So it's like project management, task management, but you can organize a bunch of stuff as well in there, communication, stuff like that. Okay, I see it. It's kind of like an all-in-one, almost like, yeah, like a task management, project management, like a Trello or Asana or something like that. Plus, it looks like it's got like chat and a few other communication things in there as well. So, okay.
Yeah. Oh. So you can add, you know, whoever's a part of your team, you can add your team to it and you guys can chat. You can comment on certain things. You can assign tasks to individual people. So that's been super dope, just kind of staying organized and, you know, just having a one place to kind of communicate instead of all these different, you know, mediums. So that's been pretty cool.
That's huge. I like, I use Trello for task management, and then I use Slack mostly for communication, Slack and Zoom. And also my new favorite is Voxer. You ever mess with Voxer?
I've heard of it. I haven't used it. How's it going?
It's great. It's like it's basically like a walkie-talkie type of app, but it's something where you just press one button, it's recording, you press it again and it stops and it just sends that. So it's like, to me, it's the fastest I can go from, oh, I have an idea, to like the least, it sounds silly, but like the least amount of buttons on my phone to now I can communicate that idea to my team or to somebody else. You know, I can be in the car and be like, oh, we should do this. And bam, I just hit, you know, basically hit two buttons.
It sends it to everybody like all at once.
Yeah, you can either have like a room set up with, you know, everybody on your team. You can, you know, hit people up individually. So you can kind of have different, either conversations with, you know, however many people you want. But you just like basically open the app, click on the, you know, whoever you want to send it to or whatever group, and then hit record and it just goes. So that's a fun one. It just makes things quick.
Yeah.
And then I also like, if I'm at my computer, I'll do Loom.com. It's like free. It'll be like screen sharing. You know, so basically, you know, I got a little quickies like Shift Command L. It starts recording, you know, my screen, and I can have it record my camera as well and my audio. Oh. And then, so if I want to like communicate something again to the team or even to somebody, you know, that I want to whatever partner up with on something, sometimes I don't like writing stuff out, I guess is what this is getting to. I'll just be like, if I just have an idea, I just want to hit, you know, voice memo or a quick video and then just show somebody and send it. I feel like that it just saves a lot of time. I kind of like working that way now. And a lot of times it's way more like I'll use it, you know, for the most part at this point, I'm not doing most of the customer service stuff on my own, but occasionally, you know, somebody on the team might tag me or something because it's like kind of a confusing thing or I don't know, whatever it is. And then a lot of times I'll record them a video, right? And I'll just, you know, I hit my little Shift Command L, records the thing, click one button, it, you know, copies a link and sends it to them. A lot of times the reaction is they're like, oh my God, like, damn, Gabe, you hit me back, you know, individually and like recorded a video and, you know, it feels like so much more value. And I think it is. And it was quicker than me like sitting and like writing out a whole answer. You know, I just hit record.
That's dope, dude. I wrote that down. I'm gonna check that out. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it. It's a game changer. And then I can geek out on this stuff forever, but like you can do stuff where you can like, I have it in Slack set up. So like, I can like, basically I copy that link. I'm able to hit like one little quick key in Slack and then it creates a Trello card that like, anyways,
you
can
automation, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. That's sweet.
Yeah, man. No, I definitely geek out on that stuff. It's fun to just try different things and anything. It's like, sometimes it doesn't seem like a big deal, but if it saves me a couple keystrokes or it saves me a few seconds, I just feel like that stuff adds up over time, you know?
Yeah, it does. Yep. My time is valuable.
Man, what else? It sounds like you're a little bit of you get into the automation and stuff. Anything else as far as, I don't know, apps or?
If this, then that. I use that for a couple weeks too. So
kind of like Zapier, right? Or do you ever mess with Zapier?
I do. I got some stuff linked up with Zapier, especially with MailChimp and things like that. You know, if someone purchased something, you know, it sends a little zap to the MailChimp, adds them to a certain list and may tag it or something like that. And then it'll shoot out an email. Then I have an automation email sequence set up in MailChimp just to kind of keep, you know, it's just stuff takes so much time, man. So anything I could do to set up to where I can still interact with people, but not have to, like, you know, manually do it each and every time, I'm all for it.
Those things are great. Like If This Then That or Zapier, because it's like basically it connects every app you have, every piece of software, every platform you're using to each other, right? So like, yeah, like you said, I'll have stuff where it's like somebody makes a purchase. So for me, maybe it's they made the purchase in ClickFunnels, but then that sends, you know, that updates a row in Google Sheets. So now I'm keeping track of the bookkeeping side. Then it also might notify me in Slack, so just so I know, okay, somebody made a purchase. And then yeah, might add them to a certain list or tag them a certain way in an email so that they get, you know, an onboarding sequence of, oh, congrats, you just bought this thing. Cool. Like, let me show you the benefits of that. And, or just let me fulfill on what I promised you. Let me send out that email. Yeah. So that's a big one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, man, I use a lot of that stuff, and especially for like, social media posts. If something's posting a YouTube video, I wanted to post to Facebook and Twitter, you know, just set up one of those little apps and just have it shoot it out to everything at once. So
definitely. So what do you got coming up next? What's on the horizon?
Yeah. So right now I'm working on wrapping up the Road to 10 Placements virtual tour. So I got a couple more dates of that. And then
tell me about that. So I remember I saw you started talking about it. You're going to go on tour. You're going to, you know, travel around, yeah, you know, helping people out with getting placements right. And kind of doing an in-person thing. And then I assume those plans changed a little bit with COVID and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the original intent was to, you know, go to different cities, you know, where I kind of had the most demand and people wanted to learn about music licensing. I had it set up, and man, we were ready to go. It would have officially launched in New York in March, and then COVID happened, and I was kind of monitoring the situation in New York, because New York was like one of the first places where it was just like hot with the spread and things like that. So it got to a point where I was just like, okay, I have to think about my family first and their safety, especially with the little guy. So I decided to just turn it and pretty much pivot and make the thing virtual and then see how it progressed. And then it just got worse and worse. So I was just like, okay, I'm gonna just make the whole tour virtual through Zoom. That way, literally people from anywhere can come. Cause at first it was just gonna be US based. But yeah, man, so we turned it virtual, gave people like a 50% discount, and it's been pretty dope, man. And honestly, I don't know, I kind of like the Zoom setting because it allows me to share my screen. If I need to pull up a web browser and kind of really dig into, you know, how to search for certain things, I can do that, and it's all right there. So it's been pretty dope. So yeah, that COVID changed the plans, but it worked out, you know, and yeah, man, I'm not mad at it. So
yeah, no, being able to pivot like that, I think, is the key. It's just, all right, new situation, cool, let's make the most of it. And a lot of times it's those limitations or it's those setbacks that end up sometimes being better than you thought. You know, it opens up this whole new world. I feel like, you know, as there's so many negative effects, of course, with mm-hmm. with the situation, but like there's been some positive stuff too, where I think where, you know, people have discovered like what you're talking about, where maybe some people, their business wasn't even online at all. You know, I have mm-hmm. friends who were doing like lessons, you know, like my buddy who I make beats with, like he was doing piano lessons and he'd always kind of talked about, yeah, it'd be cool to do something virtual or whatever. Now it's like he has to. And so it's opened up a whole different world of things. And I think having that mindset of like, you know, instead of being like, oh man, this sucks, this, you know, completely ruined my plans, I'm going to give up, or it's like, no, like just find the opportunity in there. Cause a lot of times it's going to open up a newer opportunity you didn't even expect would be there.
Exactly, man. Yep. It's all about the mindset.
Absolutely. Cool, man. Well, what else? Where can people find you?
ClemProductions.com is my website, and literally everything is kind of, you know, on there. And then I'm on Instagram a lot, at Clint Music. That's where I spend a lot of my time. And then, yeah, everything else is, man, it's connected from those two things.
Awesome. Cool, man. Well, man, I appreciate you coming on. I'm glad I got a chance to actually chat with you for a while. And man, I'll be talking to you soon.
Cool, man. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you for listening to the MIDI Money Podcast. If you're not subscribed already, please be sure to do that right now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it if you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, or comment and like the videos on YouTube. You know, those ratings, reviews, those comments, they all show that people are getting value, helps the algorithm, and helps get this podcast out to more producers. So it means so much to me if you'd be willing to take a couple minutes to do that. Oh, and if you'd like to learn more about how I was able to turn Legion Beats into a profitable business and how you can join our community of hundreds of producers all working towards that same goal, head over to MIDIMoney.com/go.